Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. Hello and welcome. On this episode of ID the Future, we're featuring an excerpt from a talk given by Casey Luskin at the 2010 Academic Freedom Day celebration at the University of Arkansas. In this final clip, Luskin explains the problems of the infamous Kitzmiller v. Dover ruling and the advocacy of the judge's decision, which incorporated errors and mistakes.
So let's go over some problems with the Kitzmiller ruling. Well, first off, ID is not creationism. It isn't based upon faith or divine revelation. I gave you the basic logic already in the talk. I'll go over it very briefly. The scientist observes that certain types of information come from a mind. She then goes out into the natural world, and this is sort of using the present as the key to the past, studying present-day causes and observing that they produce certain types of information. She then goes out and studies the natural world and finds kind of information which in our experience only comes from an intelligent source, so she infers back to a mind. You can disagree with this conclusion, but it's not an argument based upon faith or divine revelation. Whereas creationism is an argument based upon faith or divine revelation. Creationism is virtually always an attempt to find some type of evidence that conforms to some particular religious viewpoint or some interpretation of the Bible. And as I mentioned, ID proponents are not unified around some particular religious viewpoint. I'll get to that more in a sec. So ID uses the scientific method. It's not based upon faith or divine revelation. We already went through this. It's also not creationism because ID does not try to address religious questions about the identity or nature of the designer. In the Edwards versus Aguilar case in 1987, the reason why the U.S. Supreme Court declared creationism to be religion is because it advocated a, quote, supernatural creator, unquote. I would actually agree with them that if you're starting to talk about the supernatural, you're getting out of the domain of science and into religion. And ID does not advocate a supernatural creator, and it's not unified around promoting some religious viewpoint. This is an example of a lifelong atheist who a few years ago announced that he thought that the evidence supported intelligent design. And to this day, to my knowledge, he continues to have no particular religious view. There are other examples of atheists and agnostics who hold to the ID viewpoint. I work with some at Discovery Institute. And a great example is actually a professor of philosophy at the University of Colorado named Bradley Montan, who came out with a book last year, and I think the subtitle was An Atheist Defends Intelligent Design. So there you go. There are people out there who think that ID holds merit. They do not believe in God, and they don't believe in the supernatural, and so ID is clearly not unified around trying to advocate some kind of a view about the supernatural or the identity of the designer, nor is it trying to advocate some particular interpretation of the Bible. Many of these people are not even from a Judeo-Christian background. What's interesting is that somehow in the Dover ruling, the judge missed that the textbook at the heart of the Dover case, Pandas and People, actually says that scientists fail to distinguish between intelligence, which can be recognized by uniform sensory experience, and the supernatural, which cannot. So what are they saying here? What is this textbook saying? It's saying that intelligent design does not refer to the supernatural, and that the supernatural actually cannot be studied by science. But we can study intelligence. Why? Because we have a huge amount of observation-based experience with intelligent agents and the kind of information they produce. The Dover textbook also goes on to say that appeals to intelligent design may be considered in science as illustrated by current NASA search for extraterrestrial intelligence, SETI. Archaeology has pioneered the development of methods for distinguishing the effects of natural and intelligent causes. We should recognize, however, that if we go further and conclude that the intelligence responsible for biological origins is outside the universe, supernatural, or within it, we do so without the help of science. So the Dover textbook itself actually said exactly what I've been saying here. This is from one of the earliest ID works explaining how ID works, that if you go so far as to claim that the intelligence is supernatural, you're going outside of science. All ID refers to as a science is intelligent causes, because we have observation-based experience with that, so it's an appropriate explanatory cause for science. Judge Jones quoted Pandas. He ignored those quotes, but he did quote Pandas, the actual published version, where he said, "In fact, an explicit concession that the intelligent designer works outside the laws of nature and science and a direct reference to religion is Pandas' rhetorical statement. What kind of an intelligent agent was it, the designer? And the answer, on its own, science cannot answer this question but must leave it to religion and philosophy." Let's look at the rest of the story, because Judge Jones actually pretty badly misquoted the textbook. The textbook actually says, "Science is based upon experience, then science must tell us the message encoded in DNA must have originated from an intelligent cause. But what kind of an intelligent agent was it? On its own, science cannot answer this question. It must leave it to religion and philosophy." but that should not prevent science from acknowledging evidences for an intelligent cause origin wherever they may exist. So ID says that, yes, we can scientifically infer an intelligent cause. If you're going to go beyond that and try to claim that the designer is supernatural, that's not within the domain of science. It's not within the domain of ID. ID is a theory that respects the limits of science. And as we saw earlier, this quote actually adopts and endorses methodological naturalism. But the judge ignored this kind of quote in the textbook. It says that the supernatural cannot be recognized by uniform sensory experience. And that is exactly what methodological naturalism says, that we cannot study through science the supernatural. What about this whole thing about the pre-publication drafts of Pandas and People? This claim that because it used creationist language, that was evidence that somehow ID proponents were covert creationists. Bottom line is that, you know, even if they did use creation language, ID has evolved a long way since that time, and it's very clear that today ID has some distinct differences from creationism. But even in these pre-publication drafts of Pandas, we see that the way that they used the term creationism or creation was different from the way that creation was found to be a religious viewpoint by the U.S. Supreme Court. Remember that the U.S. Supreme Court said that creationism was a religious viewpoint because it referred to the supernatural. But look at the way that these pre-publication drafts of Pandas, all of which were ignored by Judge Jones, look at how they use the term creation. This is not merely the design or clockmaker argument of William Paley, which long ago was abandoned by scientists. There are two important differences. First, Paley's argument was to extrapolate to the supernatural from the clock. The problem was that biology provided no examples of the supernatural manipulating material, and thus there was no basis in uniform experience for going from nature to the supernatural, from inferring an unobserved supernatural cause from an observed effect. So what's he saying? He's endorsing methodological naturalism, that science cannot get to the supernatural. It's not going to be able to refer to a supernatural cause because we have no observation-based experience with it, but we do have experience with intelligence. And so intelligence is an appropriate explanatory cause for science. This draft goes on to say, the second difference is that unlike Paley's day, we have the scientific tools and terminology to distinguish between order and information and to quantify the latter, whether encountered on the pages of a book, in the face of a mountain, or in biology. To the end of this says, some master intellect is the creator of life, but such observable instances of information cannot tell us if the intellect behind them is natural or supernatural. This is not a question science can answer. This is Intelligent Designs, one of its earliest works endorsing methodological naturalism, that you cannot determine if the designer is supernatural just by looking at the information DNA. Why is that? This is not some attempt to be coy. This is an attempt to respect the limits of science. Let's just say for the sake of argument that the information encoding that chiral flagellar machine, let's just say that it indicates design. Now, that information, the DNA, is not saying made by Yahweh, or made by Buddha, or made by Yoda, or made by E.T., or made by fill in the blank. It's not saying who the designer is, or whether the designer is natural or supernatural. What it is saying, in my view, and the argument I made today, is that it's saying that an intelligent cause is responsible. But if we go further and try to say that the information DNA is telling us who the designer is, then we're going to go beyond what the scientific data can tell us. So it is not out of some attempt to be coy that ID does not identify the designer. It is actually out of a desire to respect the limits of science. Charles Thaxton explained this in his deposition testimony, also ignored by the judge. Why did he start using ID terminology and stop using creationist terminology in these pre-publication drafts of this early ID textbook? He says, I wasn't comfortable with the typical vocabulary that for the most part creationists were using because it did not express what I was trying to do. They were wanting to bring God into the discussion, and I was wanting to stay with the empirical domain and do what you can legitimately do there. So the very guy that started using the ID terminology, he explains that his reason for using intelligent design terminology rather than creationist terminology is not because he was trying to somehow hide the fact that ID is creationism. It's because what he was doing was not creationism, and he needed better terminology to distinguish between what he was doing and creationism. And there's some great podcast interviews with Charles Thaxton you can check out on the Discovery Institute website where he explains this in great detail. So the bottom line is that the very reason why the U.S. Supreme Court declared creationism to be unconstitutional, that it referred to the supernatural, ID lacked that property from its earliest days of formulation. Very significant. So what happened at the trial? Did ID proponents say that ID requires the supernatural? No. They said that it doesn't, and Judge Jones ignored this testimony. Microbiologist Scott Minnick, do you have an opinion as to whether intelligent design requires the action of a supernatural creator? I do. What is that opinion? It does not. Michael Behe has written, as regards to the identity of the designer, modern ID theory happily echoes Isaac Newton's phrase, hypothesis non fingo. In other words, I don't try to make a hypothesis that I can't scientifically investigate. And actually, Judge Jones cited the fact that Michael Behe and Scott Minnick, both are pro-ID biologists at leading universities, he cited the fact that they both believe that the designer was God as evidence that ID is religion. Now that is very scary, because what that says is that the personal religious views of ID proponents somehow now disqualify their views from being science. And the reality is that ID proponents are very open about their personal religious views on the identity of the designer. But they just make it clear that that's not a conclusion of intelligent design. And Michael Behe says this very clearly in his Dover testimony, completely ignored by Judge Jones. So is it accurate for people to claim or to represent that intelligent design holds that the designer was God? No, that is completely inaccurate. Well, people have asked you your opinion as to who you believe the designer is. Is that correct? Right. Science answered that question? No, science has not done so. And I believe you have answered on occasion that you believe the designer is God. Is that correct? Yes, that's correct. Are you making a scientific claim with that answer? No, I conclude that based upon theological and philosophical and historical factors, but not intelligent design. So the bottom line is that ID proponents do not try to hide their views about the identity of the designer. They don't give one talk to religious audiences and another talk to secular ones. We're very open about what we believe about the identity of the designer. As I said at the very beginning, I'm a Christian. I believe the designer is God. But that's not a conclusion of intelligent design. Like Michael Behe, I've concluded that based upon theological and philosophical and historical arguments and a number of other factors in my own personal life. But the bottom line is that Judge Jones ignored the testimony of ID proponents, and he did not allow ID proponents to stake out their own position. And he misconstrued the definition of ID theory. And so the version of ID that struck down in the Dover ruling is not the actual version of ID. What are some other problems with the ruling? Well, Judge Jones claimed that ID has not generated peer-reviewed publications. And in case you didn't get that quote, he said it in about four other places in the ruling. ID is not science, cannot be adjudged as a valid accepted scientific theory as it has failed to publish in peer-reviewed journals. So he made that very clear that ID is not published in peer-reviewed journals. But the problem is that there were various examples documented to Judge Jones of pro-ID peer-reviewed scientific papers making pro-ID arguments. Here's a few examples right here. Journals like Proceedings for the Biological Society of Washington, a book called Dynamical Genetics, Journal of Protein Science, a peer-reviewed Cambridge University Press book by William Dembski. ID has published peer-reviewed papers, and this continues to go on. In the last 6 months alone, here's four peer-reviewed scientific papers that have come out in mainstream scientific journals. And if you want these references, I'll put my email at the end. I'm happy to email them to you. Judge Jones apparently is a magician because he was able to take all these scientific papers that ID proponents have published and make them disappear somehow. I don't know how he was able to do that, but he was able to just make them disappear and pretend that they don't exist. He also pretended that the testing and scientific research of ID proponents does not exist. And most egregiously, he ignored the testimony by Scott Minnick about his own genetic knockout experiments on the bacterial flagellum, which showed that it's irreducibly complex. I don't know if Judge Jones just wasn't paying attention that day or what, but by the way, Scott Minnick is not just some backwater biologist. He's a professor of microbiology at the University of Idaho, and he's a PI of a lab that studies the bacterial flagellum. And so this is very appropriate within his research. So the bottom line is that there was research testified about in the Dover ruling that is pro-ID research, and Judge Jones apparently decided it doesn't exist. These are some other research papers that were documented to Judge Jones that support ID arguments. A couple are from the Journal of Molecular Biology, and Judge Jones ignored these as well. And the research is ongoing. The Biologic Institute is doing some very interesting research. They're measuring functional information in proteins by examining their ability to withstand sequence alterations, trying to ask the question, basically, what produces functional genetic information? Intelligent design or Darwinian evolution? And they're trying to test those questions. They're also looking at questions about what it takes for life to be possible, basically looking at what amount of fine-tuning, both in the physical laws and constants of the universe and in biology, is necessary for functional life. So what are some black and white issues that Judge Jones got wrong? I mean, you can disagree with ID, but at least if you're going to make these arguments, if you're going to criticize ID, make defensible arguments. One, ID is not a supernatural explanation. Two, Judge Jones claims that it's merely a negative argument against evolution. That was one of his key arguments against ID being science. But as we discussed today, ID is not a negative argument, and there was a lot of testimony to that effect at the Dover trial. There are peer-reviewed scientific articles supporting ID, and ID is based upon testing and research. So why was the ruling so inaccurate? Why were there all these problems? 90.9% of Judge Jones' celebrated section on idea science was taken virtually verbatim from the ACLU's proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law submitted to the judge about a month before his ruling. Now, judges are allowed to do this. I'm not accusing Judge Jones of plagiarism or doing anything unethical. Judges are allowed to do this. It is highly frowned upon by courts, and the reason is because, at least as some higher courts, like the U.S. Supreme Court, have put it, when you just sign your name to the brief of a party in your case, of one of the attorneys in your case, you tend to incorporate into your ruling the sort of overzealous advocacy of the attorney. The attorneys are supposed to be zealously advocating for their client's position, and then the judge is supposed to be the neutral arbiter of fact. And I'm sure Judge Jones believed everything he said in the ruling, but the bottom line is that the very reason why courts have frowned upon this practice comes out in the Dover case. It's because it tends to incorporate errors and mistakes and overzealous false arguments into the ruling. So some examples, Judge Jones blatantly misquoted Michael Behe. He said Behe was presented with 58 peer-reviewed publications, 9 books, several immunology textbooks about the evolution of the immune system. However, he simply insisted that this was still not sufficient evidence and that it was not good enough. What does the brief from the plaintiff's attorney say? Basically the same thing. Behe was confronted with 58 peer-reviewed publications, 9 books, several immunology textbook chapters about the evolution of the immune system, and he insisted that the evidence was not sufficient evidence of evolution because it was not good enough. Well, what did Behe actually say? These articles are excellent articles, I assume. However, they do not address the question I'm posing. So it's not that they aren't good enough. It's not that they aren't good enough. It's simply that they are addressed to a different subject. These papers, as Behe talked about, deal with questions about comparisons of sequence of genes used in the immune system to other genes, trying to explain where they came from, but they don't address Behe's question, which was a step-by-step mutational explanation for the evolution of the system. So this is a good example of an error incorporated into the ruling, a misquote of Behe. Behe didn't say they weren't good enough. He said it's not that they aren't good enough. Judge Jones said ID is not supported by any peer-reviewed research, data, or publications. Same thing, basically, in the plaintiff's brief. He copied it, changed intelligent design to ID. But, of course, as we talked about, ID proponents did testify about peer-reviewed research, data, and publications. So this is just a false claim by Judge Jones. Judge Jones said, in addition to failing to produce papers in peer-reviewed journals, ID also features no scientific research or testing. Same thing, basically, from the plaintiff's brief. Besides failing to produce papers in peer-reviewed journals, ID also features no scientific research or testing. And, of course, I talked to you about some of the research that was discussed during the Dover trial. So the rest of the story is that that's just a false claim. One last example. Judge Jones says, ID is predicated upon supernatural causation. ID takes a natural phenomenon, and instead of accepting or seeking a natural explanation, it argues that the explanation is supernatural. Plaintiff's brief, he basically copied that. Intelligent design is predicated on supernatural causation. Intelligent design takes a natural phenomenon, and instead of accepting or seeking a natural explanation, it argues that the explanation is supernatural. But that is not the version of ID that was given at the Dover trial. Professors Behe and Minnick both testified that ID is not predicated upon the supernatural and that it only refers to an intelligent cause, not a supernatural one.
That was the final excerpt from Casey Luskin's talk, The Positive Case for Intelligent Design and Why It's Being Expelled from Academia, which you can hear more of at www.idthefuture.com. For ID the Future, this is Annika Smith with the CSC in Seattle. Thanks for listening. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.